Hey, welcome back to the American Cattleman Podcast. I'm your host, Champ Ramsey. Great to have you riding with us again today. Coming up, we got some cattle news, a conversation with Gail McKinney, who's the publisher of the American Cattleman magazine. He's in to talk about not only the magazine, but some of the offerings the American Cattleman Podcast offers to producers, to providers. We think you'll enjoy. We wrap things up with a conversation from CattleCon 24 with Drake, who was on the trade show floor with the very famous Shorty's Cowboy Hattery, based in Oklahoma City. Good stuff coming your way today on ACP.
The American Cattleman Podcast is made possible through the support of Rawhide Portable Corrals, the number one portable corral on wheels. Often imitated, never duplicated. Learn more at rawhideportablecorral.com. And by Shorty's Cowboy Hattery, where for over 30 years, a Shorty's hat means you're serious about how you look. You can trust that your hat will be handcrafted by folks that truly understand the heritage of the Western cowboy. Learn more at shortieshattery.com. Now, here's the host of the American Cattleman Podcast, Chap Ramsey.
Thank you, Hunter, and thank you for listening to the American Cattleman Podcast. Great to have you along for the ride. I don't know if you know about this, but it's a story about drought, wind, and fire. At the end of February, multiple counties across Texas and Oklahoma were battling huge wildfires after those dry conditions above normal temperatures and increased wind speeds resulted in increased risk of wildfire activity. For example, the Smokehouse Creek Fire in Texas is the largest. It's burned over 500,000 acres. A number of social media posts, particularly from ranchers in the region, showed active livestock rescue efforts as the fire ravaged the landscape. Texas and Southwestern Cattle Raisers Association is urging donors to give to the TSCRA Disaster Relief Fund to aid victims of the ongoing natural disasters. Let's wish all the firefighters, the ranchers, everybody involved success and safety. Hey, Beef is reporting that with China projected to be the global leader in food service growth through at least 2026, the U.S. Meat Export Federation is speeding up efforts to expand U.S. beef utilization in targeting restaurant segments and markets in China. With funding provided by the Beef Checkoff Program and USDA's Market Access Program, promotional campaigns for U.S. beef took place in December and January at multiple outlets in several restaurant chains in Shanghai and five cities in South China. The winter campaigns promoted the superior attributes of grain-fed U.S. beef to consumers while introducing alternative cuts to the restaurant chains. The February feedlot inventory was pegged at 11.8 million head, and that's just a bit above year-ago levels. Feedlot inventories are declining after rising a year earlier last October. Feedlot placements in January were 92.5% of last year, above the pre-report average estimate, but within the range of estimates by some analysts. Now, some are expecting a larger negative impact on placements from the winter storms in January. January marketings were even with a year ago. The March edition of the American Cattleman magazine's out with stories about choosing modified live or killed viruses for calves. What do stocker and cow-calf producers think of virtual fencing and the anatomy of sale hosting? Check out the online edition at AmericanCattleman.com. All right, stay with us, because coming up, a conversation with the publisher of the American Cattleman magazine, Gail McKinney. We caught up with Gail at the Iowa Beef Expo and talked about the mission of the magazine, what the American Cattleman podcast is doing for producers, and a whole lot more. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
It's way more than just a hat. It's a piece of American tradition. We're talking about Shorty's Cowboy Hattery, the finest handmade hats in the country. Founded by National Cowgirl Museum and Hall of Fame, Lavona Shorty Coger. For over 30 years, Shorty's Cowboy Hattery has covered the heads of rodeo stars, music stars, working ranch cowboys, and folks that just want to look like one. Shorty's hats remain world famous and are sought after for their attention to detail, intricate sewing process, and signature beaver fur and beaver fur blends. You gotta get you one or two. Visit shortyshattery.com because you deserve the best.
Hey, welcome back to the American Cattleman Podcast. My name's Chap Ramsey. I'm your host. And we've got a special guest today. We're going to sit down with the owner of the American Cattleman Magazine and also my boss. He's Gail McKinney from ACP, the American Cattleman Podcast. Gail, good to see you again, brother.
Good to see you, Chap.
We had a time, didn't we? We was in Orlando, Florida for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. Wow.
Yeah, that was a good trip. And, you know, I appreciated so much seeing all the exhibitors. I mean, the people who are at that show are the people who patronize and who we serve. So it was really good to be there, plus the producers you see.
Right. And today we're sitting here in Des Moines, Iowa, chatting a little bit here at the Iowa Beef Expo. And smaller scale, much smaller scale than what NCBA is, of course, but the same vibe. You know, you get the same vibe from these producers as what we did when we was in Orlando.
Yep, same thing. I mean, this is a close-knit group of people, and wherever you travel, wherever you go, whether we're sitting here in Des Moines, Iowa, Orlando, Florida, San Antonio, Texas, Denver, Colorado, you're still going to get salt of the earth, good people.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about the evolution of the American Cattleman Podcast. We call it ACP around the office, so I guess we can call it that and let you folks in on a little secret. Yeah, it is ACP because, you know, you got to have letters that go with everything. So tell us a little bit about how this started, where it's been, and what's going on now, because you're doing some producer segments that is brand new to these folks, yeah?
Yeah, we started this thinking that, you know, there wasn't a lot of podcasts out there in the beef industry. The ones that were well done, but they were done around serious topics. And not that ours isn't, but they were done around topics, you know, that deal with actual production and in the genomics of the industry and the EDPs and talking about BVD and everything in the book. And we knew for us to really bring value and to have a content-driven program, we had to do something different. So you and I talked, and we thought that why don't we do this around some serious stuff? And we interview producers, and we interview manufacturers, and we interview veterinaries, and we interview doctors, but we also interview entertainers.
Right. This is totally different.
Yep. Now, you just interviewed a young lady called Abby Hamilton.
Right.
And what an interesting interview that was. And you know, a young lady songwriter who's kind of country, kind of alternative music. But that's good because this industry changes, too. We have people who are my age, your age, but we also have a younger segment who listen to different things than we do. So that was our start there. As we went along, you got producers starting to tell us, that's great, but we need help selling our cattle. That's what's important to us. And that's really who we deal with, cow-calf producers. That's our bread and butter, always has been. And so we thought, well, why can't we do a podcast around that? Why can't we interview these producers, talk to them about their sale, talk to them about their families, and bring that out to these other producers? And that's been a joy. I have loved doing that. It's just heartfelt work when I get to talk to those people because half the interview is learning about the history of the families, been doing this 50 years or 100 years or 150 years. And then you have a few people who I just interviewed a young man the other day who started about 10 years ago and was not even in the industry and now has 400 head of cows.
Wow.
Yeah. A really cool story. So there's just...
So there are opportunities still for young people to get in, because I know the price of land is way high. But so there are opportunities yet for young people to get into the business.
Yep. It's not easy. You know, we can't pretend it is. But hard work, save some money, find a good banker, have a good story, have a good business plan. Yeah, I think there is still real opportunity in the cow-calf industry to continue to do that. Much, much better than with row crop.
Right. Well, you know, and it's labor-intensive in the cow-calf industry. You don't get to put 4 weeks behind a tractor and then 4 weeks, you know, the 4x4 farmers. Nothing against that at all. You know, mechanism's mechanism, and they can do it. But cow-calf producers are on 24/7.
Yeah, and I hear that a lot. So I'll be on with maybe dad and mom, and daughter and son-in-law are back home taking care of the cows, or outside taking care of the cows while they're in the house with that interview. And they time is precious.
Yep, yep. We was recently in Orlando at the National Cattlemen's Beef Association meeting. They called it CattleCon 24. Well, I figured that was kind of an odd name, but anyway, that's what they call it. And we had a good time there. We saw so many large producers, and the trade show area was massive. I mean, you know, Shorty's Cowboy Hattery, howdy, how are you doing? We love those people. They're really good folk down there in Oklahoma City. What was that experience like for you? I know you've been before. I've been before, but tell folks about what that was like.
This time, I think the word's gratifying. We boosted that show for a long time. We're a sponsor, been a sponsor for a long time. And you're right. It tends to be some of the ranchers who are members of that and come to that show are, let's say, a little better well-heeled. But you'll also have, and the regional side, you'll have many cattle producers come. But it was just gratifying to have so many people come up to our booth, exhibitors as well as producers, recognize us, speak highly of us. Nothing makes me feel better than when somebody walks by and it's a thumbs up and I'm a subscriber.
Right.
You know,
right.
That's important. Or to have an advertiser come over and say, you guys do a great job. And that's what it's about. And, you know, we're one day away from not doing a good job. So we've got to do a good job
every day. Right, right. Just like those cattle producers.
Exactly right.
So you're just not a magazine and a podcast. You got a whole bunch of other things that you can offer advertisers, right?
Yep. We have the largest social media site in the cow-calf industry. American Cattlemen, check that out on Facebook and Twitter and X now. But
that
Instagram,
boy's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, you're exactly right. And yeah, so we can market your message digitally, still do the print magazine. And, you know, we have an interesting industry. Average age, 65 years old.
Right.
But it tends to be families. So you have grandma, grandpa, dad and mom, and a whole flock of young ones. You just talked to a young man in Minnesota, Don Schiefelbein, and what's that, like 100 people or something?
100 people in that family, and they're taking care of it with a cow-calf herd. I mean, that's he's got 8 brothers.
Yep, 2,000 cows, though.
Yeah, but
so it's roots run deep.
Yeah.
And so we want to foster that. You know, we want to work with those people and foster that family relationship, because that family relationship runs through the manufacturers and the service providers too. You'll see veterinaries out there who have children now being the vets. It's interesting, as we work with a lot of advertising and media types, it used to be dad and now you're working with the daughter. And
right.
So these people tend to stay in the industry regardless of what they're doing. They still stay with that industry.
One of the things that you and I talked about some time ago was the fact that how family this is. And you just raised that issue. So many of these people stick together and stick in the industry. Sometimes it feels like we're preaching to the choir, though, because the 98% of Americans that ain't involved in production agriculture need to know what the heck is going on inside.
That's exactly right. And the industry itself, in my mind, in the last 2 to 3 years, almost during COVID, has really started to promote this thing. NCBA is really out there promoting it. You see way more pasture to plate. You see, and that I think that will continue. I think that eliminating that process of going through a market, you know, but what that takes communication.
Right.
And, you know, when you have maybe 50% of the country that does not have an agricultural background within that lineage, they don't know what's going on at all.
No.
They don't know where a gallon of milk comes from other than it comes from Fairway.
Right.
You know? And so that's a tough
message. So this is a story to tell.
Oh, yes.
And of course, we're preaching to the choir right now because the folks that listen to ACP probably are in the cow-calf industry, you know, and maybe they're manufacturers of stuff. And so we're kind of preaching to the choir. But at the same time, it's out there. And people who have a desire to learn can learn so much mm-hmm. about and get the truthful story, not something that's made up. You know, we talked to some folks at NCBA. 100 years ago, Gail, 25% of the American public was involved in production agriculture. Now it's 2%.
Yep.
And just what you said, milk comes from the grocery store. That's don't exactly come from right. no cow.
Yeah, and those people who were involved with agriculture and weren't involved with agriculture still had the agricultural segment delivering the product to them. So they knew where they were getting their product. You know, your mom and dad, my mom and dad, our grandparents, you know, got their
right
milk. Yeah, got their milk, got their things from the farmer.
Right.
And so it was a much closer knit network. So was the delivery method, if you think about it. Every little town had 6 grocery stores. And it was a block. It wasn't you have to drive clear across town to go to Walmart to get your chicken or whatever the hell you want to get. You know, it was there and available in a familiar context by people you knew.
Yeah, you know, one of the things, and we just interviewed when we were at NCBA, a young man who, hey, it's a great story. And it's going to be on an upcoming podcast for American Cattlemen Magazine. Young man who grew up in Denver, watched Yellowstone, thought, yeah, I want to be a cowboy. So he hired on to a ranch up in Montana. And now he's back in Denver. He's created this whole software program that goes ranch to restaurant and farm to table, mm-hmm. where you can get your steak, whatever it is, in a day. It's an amazing story.
Yeah, and I think that's the trek that savvy producers are probably going to take. Not all, but it's a great market. They can market that beef for a ton better price. It's more work, and they have to take care of that production component and that kill component, and that's a big thing. But you're exactly right. For those people who watch Yellowstone, and if they'll remember, as the show went along, that's where the Dutton family finally got, was that they were going to have to start taking that product and marketing it direct to consumer, as much as they didn't want to do that.
Yep, because, well, it's pretty easy. If you got somebody coming to the lot to buy your calves, you're done. On the other side, there's a whole lot more work when you go farm to table or ranch to restaurant.
Yeah, and in this industry, too, you know, we have to admit it, competition's pretty steep. These producers compete
right
with each other, and there'll probably be even more competition as more and more of them go what I call pasture to plate, and they are going to have to be better marketers.
Right.
And they're going to have to come up with some ideas and things and talk to people who've done this for a while and help them get those products out there.
Final question for you, Gail, and I just want to dive into the fact that you're no stranger to the farm.
Nope.
Yeah. And that's why you can talk with some authority when you're talking about all this. I knew your mama and your daddy well, loved them both.
Thank you.
Were the salt of the earth. And you grew up on a small farm.
Yep, did. We grew up in southern Iowa. We are lifetime members of the American Angus Association. We had about 300 cows back in the day. We had the bad fortune, or I did, of farming in the late 70s, early 80s, and which, you know, I always say wiped out my generation of farmers. We were fortunate. We were able to keep the land, and I went back to college and got my
degree.
Took
a whole different line of work.
Whole line of work, yeah. But kind of came back home with this stuff. Yeah, I love this. You know, I'm 69 years old, and people say, are you retired yet? And I said, no, I'm never
retired. The hell am I going to retire for?
Why would I? I love this.
Yeah.
I love working with cattle producers. I love working with the industry in general. And it's what I do.
Well, I'll never forget your daddy. He was an amazing man. He, in his 90s, was still tending critters.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Bought himself a little New Holland skid steer because the buckets were getting too heavy to carry when he was 90-some years old. He he continued to do livestock up in about 95, I think it was, and then he decided he was going to start a lumber mill, and he started and he started cutting Osage Orange, which is hedge,
right?
And had a little down in Murray, Iowa. He'd drive down there every day, about 14 miles, and he and another gentleman who was younger than him, about 85. And they, made stuff out of that Osage Orange. He did that until he was 99.
So there you go. I mean, if you keep at it, you keep at it.
Yep.
And that's so vitally important for folks to remember. That's why we're in this business, and that's why we're doing what we're doing. Not only love of agriculture and the beef producers and the folks that make up that 2% of production agriculture, but for all Americans to have a better life and a better opportunity. That's what the American Cattlemen Magazine is all about and the American Cattlemen Podcast. Gail, thanks for sitting down and talking with us.
Oh, no, thank you.
That's new news from Gail McKinney, the publisher of American Cattlemen Magazine and this program, the American Cattlemen Podcast. All right, stay with us because coming up next, you're going to meet Drake, who is shaping and talking hats during CattleCon 24. Drake was working the booth for Shorty's Cowboy Hattery. So we sat for a spell and defined what a hat is compared to a ball cap and why you never, ever put your hat on a bed. That and more coming up next on the American Cattlemen Podcast.
We understand cattle. That's why the world's first hydraulic corral just keeps getting better. Our system is simple, flexible, and durable, built to keep your cattle operations easy and trouble-free. All the best features of a portable system with unmatched customer service is why Rawhide is often imitated, never duplicated. The Rawhide Portable Corral.
Hey, welcome back to the American Cattlemen Podcast. My name's Shep Ramsey. Great to have you aboard. Thanks for joining us on this ride today. With me is Drake Jones. Now, Drake is a trade show guy that we met up here at the NCBA, and he works for Shorty's Hattery. They make some beautiful hats. I mean, I'm looking at this display here, and they got all kinds of things, and he is a wealth of knowledge. Drake, welcome to the American Cattlemen Podcast. Great to have you aboard, sir.
Thank you for having me, chap. It's a pleasure.
So tell me about this business. It's been around for a while.
Yes, so Shorty started the business back in 1990, and it wasn't something she just decided she was going to do. She actually is a former rodeo person. She rodeoed growing up, and then she managed a couple Western Wear stores there in Moore, Oklahoma, and then got into it kind of by accident. She'd sent some hats off to be renovated. They ruined them, and she was like, you know what? I'm just going to make my own hat. I'm going to renovate my own hats. And, 1990, so, she's one of the only female started and ran hat companies in the U.S. She was a Cowgirl Hall of Fame inductee in 2021 there in Fort Worth, Texas.
All right.
For what she's done in the Western industry, just with her influence in the hats and the fact that, you know, she built this business, no husband, no man, and she's got a lot of backbone, and she's 76 years old, so she don't get to every show anymore, but she's got three or four of us that travel, and we do about 50 trade shows a year from Las Vegas, Nevada, all the way to Orlando, Florida.
So, Dre, tell me a little bit about the manufacturing of these hats. What goes into all that?
It's and right now it's hard because a lot of people get their felt from Eastern Europe, and so right now, you know, it's harder than ever, and everybody wants a cowboy hat right now. But in saying that, we're a custom hatter, so we measure your head, we build a mold for that head, and then we build the hat around that.
Wow.
So what we do, mainly pure beaver hats, which is
top
of the
line.
De la creme.
It is,
yes,
top of the
line.
Yes,
it is what you need, and for our ranchers and cowboys and people that are in the performance horse industry, that's what you need.
Well, I've always said if you buy the good stuff, it'll last you a long time.
Yeah, we fight that argument sometimes as far as, well, I don't want a good one because I'll ruin it. Well, if you had a good one,
you wouldn't.
It's a lot harder to ruin it. So, yeah. So we manufacture them there in Oklahoma City. We've got a storefront in front of the factory there, but we got about 10 or 12 people, a couple of them part time, but that their whole job is to manufacture the hat.
Now, I've seen videos of hat manufacturing, and there's a lot of talent that goes into that.
It's a people always joke and say, you know, oh, what you do is an art. And I'm like, well, this is the shaping and the selling is 10% of the process. Those folks that are back at the factory that are actually finishing the hat, sanding it, blocking it, crimping it, manufacturing the hat, those are the real heroes in this, because without them, I don't have a good hat to put on someone's head. I don't have a good hat to shape up, and that is the biggest part of the process. Like I said, we're what you see here is 10% of it.
Right.
90% is what they're doing there at the shop, building and manufacturing the hat.
It's a great story. It really is. Since 1990, Shorty's been at this, and you know, Cowgirl Hall of Fame, the whole thing. I mean, that's a big, big deal for people who know that.
Yes, and it's not widely known, and she's so modest she don't ever tell anybody. But any chance I get to, because it's not everybody gets to work for a Hall of Famer,
right?
You know, that's your dream when you start shaping hats. You know, when you really get into it, and you want to work for a company that is well known, but you want to work for good people too, and you don't get to where Shorty is without
being a good person,
taking care of people, and trying to make sure the customer is always happy.
Now, I've always had this impression, for folks that don't know much about rodeo or don't know much about the cowboy life or don't know much about much of that kind of stuff, they'll walk into a store or they'll say, hey, I'm going to go out and buy me a cowboy hat.
Mm-hmm.
What do we call them?
They're hats.
Yeah, right.
You know, they're hats. That's, it's always funny. We sell a lot of ball caps here at Shorty's because we put a lot of time and effort in designing those too, even though they're a small percentage of what we got going on. But it's so funny because people are like, hey, how much are your hats? And you start, oh, no, these right here,
those are ball caps.
Those are ball caps. So it's different demographics as far as where you grew up and things. I think they call them different, but being from Texas, working out of Oklahoma, these are hats.
There's hats.
Lids, you know, whatever you want to call them, but you don't have to put that cowboy in front of there.
And never put your hat on a bed.
That's, yeah, numero uno there. Yeah.
So tell us why that is.
It's one of those deals where it's bad luck because it almost signifies that the story I've always told people is when cowboys used to pass away, they used to put their it's almost like
somebody died.
Yeah, so like when you bury a Marine, you know, they punch their badges and their medals onto that coffin. It's the same thing for a cowboy. That cowboy hat is his medal. You know, it's his certificate of what he's done in his life. So to put that hat on that bed, it's like punching that nail in the coffin, more or less.
It is bad luck, ladies and gentlemen. So you heard it here from Shorty's Hattery and Drake. Just don't put that hat on a bed.
Please don't.
Don't do that. What have you learned being on the road for so long for Shorty?
The thing I always tell people, it's not so much about the hats, but everybody's different. Like, the different graphic. I mean, you go 500 miles to the east, 500 miles to the west, and you're talking to completely different people.
Right.
And they might have grown up the same way, on ranches, running cattle, on horseback, rodeoing, whatever they might be doing. But, you know, that different demographic changes depending on where you are. And I think that's the coolest thing with us traveling is, instead of being a standstill store and seeing the same people over and over again, you get to see these different folks and to learn their experience and what they've been through, and it gives you a brighter eye towards the industry, but also just life in general.
Now, you're at NCBA with us. How difficult is it to sell in a captured environment like this? I mean, there's a lot of cowboys out here.
I think with this group, because we've been doing this show for about 6 years now, that we have grounded ourselves with a good bunch here.
Yeah.
and you treat people right, word spread. This is a pretty tight-knit community. People talk, people do business with people, and I think we've treated enough of them right, hopefully, and we get a lot of return customers. I got a bunch from Florida that we see every year. They buy at least one hat from me every year.
How did you learn to shape hats?
It was a try to make this story as short as possible.
But it's all right. We got time.
Grew up in a little bitty small town. Had a little Western wear store. Worked there when I could. Got into it. Got away from it. Went to college. Got back into it kind of in college. And then I used to be at the corporate store for Cavender's. So was there for about 6 years and did trade shows and events for them. And met Shorty that way. Bought a couple hats from her before I ever worked for her.
Mm.
So when I got ready to leave the industry, she called me and she said, I'd love to have you, at least for a handful of shows. And about midway through the first show I did for her, it wasn't even so much the hat shaping. She just liked the way I treated people and my storytelling, you know. And she's like, I want to hire you full time if you'd have us, you know. I would love to sing you on the road, truck, trailer, and get down and let's see if you can't sell some hats to these guys.
In shaping a hat, there's different styles out there and different popularities, mm-hmm. right? So what's popular right now?
It really depends. Like we were talking about that demographic. We do a ton of shows that are performance horses. So the cutting horse industry, the reining cow horse, and then the reining. And then in the AQHA, too, with Western Pleasure Horsemanship, that demographic as far as the horse show industry wear a very particular shape, and it's been that way for years. But I think with it's ebbs and flows.
Yeah.
You know, like you see it about every 5 or 6 years, it flows to people want a wider brim. They want to go wide, wide, wide. And then it starts to come back in, and it just – I think it's who's big in the industry right now. Like, so if you look in, like, the country music industry, Cody Johnson, like, he wears a little wider brim. I get people all the time, I want a Kojo shape, you know. So I think it flows. And the ranching side of things, because you got ranchers all over the U.S., it changes dramatically. But, like, let's say the reining horse industry, a large percentage of your reiners are in North Texas and Scottsdale. So because their demographic is a smaller, you know, plot, I think it doesn't differ as much. But like here, you've got stuff from
everything.
It's a mosh pit as far as when it comes to hat shaping. And it's all personal preference. I think a lot of it has to deal with how your dad wore his. Just with anything else, you know, maybe not so much grandpa because times change, but I think you grow up looking at somebody and looking at a shape, that's what you're going to want. You know what I mean?
I can tell you, I'm of a certain age that I still think George Strait's the king.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I think he still is. And, you know, he's got his own line with another company.
Sure.
But that's another person that, hey, I want that George Strait cut.
Yeah.
You know, which is just a cattleman's crown with a little flatter front, but not near as wide and near as sharp is what a lot of these folks are wearing now.
Right. You know, I as I'm talking to you, I still got my old rodeo hat that I used to wear
years ago,
and it's beat to heck. You know, but every once in a while, I'll just pull that thing out. You know, it's all rounded up front,
yeah.
And it's got dirt all over it.
I've got some folks that I see every once in a while. And they'll, hey, can you fix this crease or blah, blah, blah? And they're like, don't wipe the dust off of it. That dust is earned. That sweat on that hat is earned. It's like a badge of honor almost for those guys. And that good old roll from the brim from what I call a little more howdy, ma'am.
Mm-hmm.
You can't put that in a brand new hat. That takes years and years. You got to earn it. You know what I mean?
You got to earn it. Oh, boy. This has been so fun talking to you, Drake. I mean, you are a true gentleman. I'll give you that.
I appreciate that.
And I've watched you work now for a couple of days here in the booth, and you just mesmerize people. I mean, when they come up and talk to you, you got a great smile and you know, an attractive guy, and you got them right there.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I always tell people that if the hats don't work, I'm going to go be a used car salesman because I got all the story and all the, we'll keep it PG, but all the BS that you need to get something sold. So,
I want to thank you so much, Drake, for sitting down with the American Cattlemen Podcast and talking to us about Shorty's Hattery. And it's been just a pleasure to get to know you and visit with you. So thank you.
I appreciate it, Chap. Thank you for having us. In retrospect to Shorty Hattery, we appreciate y'all and everything that y'all are doing for the industry, because without the people pushing, you know, the knowledge and the efforts, you know, this industry dies. And it's I think the world that we live in now is trying to get rid of the cattlemen, and we need the cattlemen. So I appreciate you, Chap, and everything y'all do.
That's Drake Jones from Shorty's Cowboy Hattery. What a nice young man. It was our pleasure to sit down and visit with Drake about a whole bunch of things that's important to you and me and the American Cattleman Magazine. That's about time to close the gate on this segment of ACP. We hope that you enjoyed it, and we'll catch you next time.